No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We're on a roll here in Washington, D.C. with D.C. statehood. We had the president say, "I'm for it." We've had a hearing in front of the United States Senate for the first time in 21 years. We have a record number of co-sponsors on our statehood bill, 109 in the House, 20 in the United States Senate. We've got a lawyer who is going to put in a lawsuit tomorrow against the federal government, and we're lucky enough to have Johnny Barnes with us today to explain it. And then we're going to hear from another old friend of the show's, Anish Jenkins of Stand Up for Democracy, to talk about the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, and some of the statehood activities that went on around their national legislative conference this week. Before we start, though, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who had a birthday yesterday. We brought her a cake, but unfortunately we could not put the right number of candles on it because that big a blaze requires a special permit from the fire department. Hi, listen. Kathleen.
Hey, how are you? It's so
let
nice
me say, you're not getting older. You're just getting crankier.
Listen, well, being around you all 24/7 gives me a right to be a little cranky, but I must say I have to admit I am getting old because I was visiting a good friend of mine who we were both born in the same year, and I said, "Dang it, you know, we're going to be 58." And she says, "What are you talking about?" So we had this big debate. She goes, "We're not going to be 58. We're going to be 57. So I was, during my 56th year, I was 57 and realized I missed on my 56th year. So I'm going to be 56 this year and 58 the next birthday. So I just want to let everyone know that when you do get old, sometimes you can't quite remember if it's 56, 57, 58, 62, 63. So anyway, I'm glad I cleared that up for myself.
Yeah, how's Martha Washington doing? We haven't seen her in a while. You're old.
Anyway, thank you so much. I'm excited to be on the show because it's, you know, really kind of really history breaking. There's so much that's going on with statehood, and I can't believe it because, you know, just a month or so ago, we didn't know what was going to happen. So it's really exciting what all that's been taking place.
And you know, we're hitting on all eight cylinders, as we used to say. We're working it from every angle we can. We have activists out there who are lobbying Congress and causing a fuss. We have the president behind us. We have the leader of the Senate saying that we deserve statehood, and the president saying I'm for it. And we have a good friend of democracy, a man who worked on the Hill for a long time for our first representative, and he's with us today, Johnny Barnes. And Johnny's going to put in a lawsuit tomorrow, but since I'm not a lawyer, I'm not going to tell you about him. We're going to let him tell you about it. Are you there, Johnny?
Yes, I'm here, Senator, and let me just say it's a delight to be with you whenever I'm honored with that occasion. And, you know, Shakespeare, Kathleen, said that age is unnecessary. But now that you're 21, I think you will understand that there are more responsibilities that come with with that aging process.
Boy, the last time somebody, the last time somebody talked to me like that, they tried to borrow money. So be careful, Kathleen.
I was talking to Kathleen like that, not you, Senator. You're my age.
So tell us, Johnny. I mean,
well,
here's the thing,
Senator. The lawsuit won't be put in tomorrow. It's going to be put in soon. But we're going to deliver a copy of the complaint to the Speaker of the House, Mr. Boehner.
I see.
To allow the Congress an opportunity to do the right thing, because they did the wrong thing many years ago when they passed the Organic Act of 1801. Now, when they passed the Organic Act of 1801, we lost all our rights. 2 weeks before they passed the Organic Act, Senator and Kathleen, the people who lived in the District of Columbia had all the same rights as every other citizen. We voted for president, vice president, senators, representatives, and a local government. What the Organic Act did was to take those rights away, not intentionally, but they wanted to take over the District of Columbia, Congress did, and inadvertently they took those rights away. Now, what was understood, though, in terms of surrendering those rights, was that the people of the District of Columbia were expected to receive certain bounty and benefit by virtue of surrendering those rights. Now, that may seem like a contradiction, that Congress didn't intentionally do it, but the record is clear and replete that it was a bargain for exchange between those in authority to offer up the surrendering of those rights and those who accepted the agreement. That under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, Congress shall have exclusive authority. So the outcome was that we lost those rights that we had exercised 2 weeks before. And in time, when the bounty didn't flow to the Virginia part of Washington, D.C., they asked for their land back and got it back in 1846. Now, Congress kept up with the bargain for years. And again, the record is replete with comments and statements that we will not remove any federal agencies from the District of Columbia because we have an agreement with the people. And if we remove them, we'll be in breach of that agreement. And so all of the removal efforts that occurred up until 1938, from 1801 to 1938, were shot down. And as they were shot down, by a record of statements from a line of members of Congress saying, we can't do that, we have a deal. Now, the deal may not have been a good deal for us in the District of Columbia, but there were Congress people as close as Virginia who said they wouldn't have made the deal because they wouldn't have given up their rights. But it's a deal nonetheless, and the deal was that they can't move anything out of the District of Columbia. Well, beginning in 1938, they started moving things out of the District of Columbia, and they moved the NIH to Bethesda. And then the war came, and they started moving lots more things, the Pentagon, and eventually the CIA and NSA. And now, Senator and Kathleen, they're poised to move the FBI out of the District of Columbia. And what we're saying to the Speaker is that if you move the FBI, it'll be a continuing breach of this deal. And what we hope we're going to say to the court is don't let them move the FBI unless they give us our rights. That's the only way they can get out of the deal, is to restore us to the position we were in before the deal was made. Now, last thing, Senator, now let you and Kathleen ask a question if you like. So count one of the complaints says there was a deal. It was a bargain for exchange. The people of the District of Columbia, have held up our part of the deal by virtue of surrendering our rights over all these years. Congress held up its part of the deal until 1938, when they began to breach, And now they want to continue that breach by moving the FBI building, and they shouldn't be able to do so. The courts cannot give us statehood. Only the Congress can. But the courts can say, you have a deal, either respect that deal or let the people of the District of Columbia out of the deal. Restore them back to where they were in 1801. That's count one. And let me just quickly cover count two, and then I'll defer. Count two, there are many treaties to which the United States is a party. They ratify those treaties. The Senate ratifies treaties with foreign governments, and they've agreed to the terms. And in many of those treaties, the terms say you've got to give the people of Washington, D.C., the same rights you give everybody else. Well, every country in the world respects those treaties, those deals, those obligations to which their governments, for which those governments have ratified. Everybody except the United States of America. So count two asks the court to force the United States to live up to what it's already agreed to, and that is to treat the people of Washington, D.C. no different than they treat anybody else. And so we're going to tell the speaker, last thing, we're going to tell the speaker that we're going to wait 90 days before we file this lawsuit. And if in 90 days within that period, the speaker or some other prominent Republican puts in a D.C. statehood bill, then we will consider not filing the lawsuit because that will show good faith in restoring our rights. And that's the only way that they'll avoid the law. And during that period, we're going to send the complaint out to constitutional law professors and contract law professors and international law professors and ask them to help us make the complaint more perfect. And then we would file it on January 3rd when the new Congress comes in, 2015, in about 90 days, if there's no D.C. statehood bill put in by the speaker.
Well, you know, thanks for explaining that to us, Johnny. And the thing that I find most interesting about this is that, first of all, the point that you make that there's really nothing in the Constitution that takes our rights away. It only gives Congress the right to do what they want with us, where they decided in the Organic Act that that's what they would do. I mean, this is something we hear constantly. We hear the founding fathers didn't want you to have voting rights, and there's no reason to believe that at all. I mean, it seems to me that in Federalist 21 and in several other documents that we use to analyze what the founders wanted, we don't seem to see that anywhere. They just wanted to give Congress control. So I think that's a really important point in your lawsuit. And number two, I have a couple questions for you. Now, yeah. I know that Tim Cooper has for many years tried to get international courts to rule on what seems to be a similar principle as count two. Is that right? Is it the same sort of thing?
It's the same principle. And in fact, Tim Cooper brought a complaint before the international body back in 1998, and they sustained it. I don't know the exact site. I think it was statehood for New Columbia versus the United States. And the international agency agreed with Tim Cooper. So it's exactly the same. And the only difference is we're now going to the federal court in the United States as opposed to the international court. And we're saying to the federal court, order the Congress to do what it has agreed to. And so in the past, the federal court has not touched things like that because they've said it's a political question. But if you look at cases since Tim Cooper prevailed before the international court, more and more federal courts are saying, well, you know, international courts, I mean, our federal courts, our domestic courts, ought to respect some of the rulings of the international courts and ought to respect and ought to engage in the conflicts when the United States is involved in foreign matters. And so while that has been a hands-off thing in the past in terms of our federal courts, they are now more, the enlightened federal courts are more inclined to engage in decision-making where international law is involved. And so we're optimistic that the good groundwork done by Tim Cooper, and he's been a stalwart, a long-distance runner in this cause, that good groundwork can now form the basis for count two of our complaint in the United States federal courts.
Well, let me ask a question, and this is for people who are outside the D.C., you know, our audience, because we do have quite an audience that probably is trying to figure out what the Organic Act is. Is that something that happened? I mean, can you explain a little bit of the history of the Organic Act for the listening audience?
Yes, of course. And Senator Brown knows it as well as anybody. But the Congress was concerned that they would control the seat of government, and that's based on some incidents that happened which left them a little vulnerable. They didn't want states to control the federal government. They didn't want states to, they didn't want to be within a state. And so they wanted to create their own home. Problem is, people lived where Congress wanted to make its home. And so the question was, what do we do with this area that now that it's ours? It's our home, Congress said. What do we do with it? So the first thing they did was, let's pass a law that effectively freezes all the laws so we can control our home. And unfortunately, among those things was the ability, the power, if you will, of the people, 3,500 people who lived in this sparsely populated wilderness, to vote. And, of course, the population has burgeoned since then. It reached 800,000 at one point. And now we're roughly 650,000 and growing once again. But we're larger than a couple of states and comparable to 10 states in size. And size was never a factor in the question of statehood, because they knew there were going to be small states as well as big states. They knew there were going to be urban dwellers and agrarian people. So none of that mattered, but they passed this Organic Act in 1801 to take control over their new home. It caused us to be treated differently than everybody else.
Thanks for that explanation, and I don't think anybody knows it better than you do. Let me also ask you, why are we asking the Republicans to put in a bill as opposed to allowing, for example, our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, to resubmit the new Columbia Admission Act, which is in this Congress and has so many co-sponsors? What's different about asking the Republicans to do it? Why are we asking the Republicans to do it?
That's an excellent question, Senator. You're always a good examiner. We're not asking Congresswoman Norton not to put in her bill. We're asking the Speaker and the Republican Party to either join with Congresswoman Norton or put in their own bill. And if it's a statehood bill, if there's a word different here or a word different there, it doesn't matter. In fact, they can say they can say guns are allowed in the new state, once we become a state, we make our own decisions. The Congress tried to tell Oklahoma, as a condition for admission, that you got to put your capital in a certain place, and once Oklahoma became a state, they didn't do it, and that went to the Supreme Court, and the court said you can't make them do that. So, the Republican Party may have its own notions of how it wants the new state to look, but we'll look like everybody else. So the goal here, Senator, is not to exclude Congresswoman Norton. We appreciate all her work, nor Senator Harry Reid in the Senate, who has co-sponsored that Senate bill, and Senator Carper, the Democrats. Mm-hmm. We want to bring the Republicans along. And we think the only way, or one of the best ways, although there are other ways, and you all are doing a great job working on the Congress, educating them about this. You all are doing a great job reaching out to people across the country. I know that you, Senator, have gone all over the place, encouraging folks to support. So this is really another battleground. You know, we're fighting in the Congress, we're fighting outside the Congress, and now we're going to fight in the courts. So we don't care if the Republicans put in their own bill or join with Congresswoman Norton. We just want them to show good faith that they're going to restore our rights. And the only way to restore our rights, because there are two parts to our rights, political standing and sovereignty. You can't get them both with these incremental ideas people have bouncing around. The only way to give us political standing and sovereignty, to put us on equal footing with everybody else, to treat us no differently than anybody else, is to make us a state.
So you would not be in favor if the Republicans came back with a bill that said, well, we'll give you the ability to control your budgets. That would not be something that's suitable, right?
That's not restoring our rights. That's not giving us what we had before passage of the Organic Act. No.
And I hear that a lot. And so I'm wondering, you know, budget, giving you the budget autonomy over your own budget can also be taken away at any time also, correct?
Absolutely, Kathleen. You're right on point. Any Congress is not bound by a future Congress except on the question of statehood. Statehood can never be taken away. It's permanent. Once you give it, that's it. And so budget autonomy could be changed by the same Congress. They can change their mind a week later. So
exactly.
It doesn't give us permanency, and more importantly, it doesn't give us our full bundle of self-government rights.
Well, and you know, I think sometimes, Johnny, that people forget that what we're really going through here is a civil rights struggle. And that certainly was, you know, the lesson that I think we learned from the civil rights struggles in the South in the 50s and 40s, 50s and 60s, was that you really got to attack on all fronts, right? I mean, you've got to, they attacked in the courts, they did civil disobedience, they used the media, they just attacked it on every level, and some things hit and some things didn't. But I think at one point, you know, and I hope this happens in our struggle, we'll reach critical mass. And that's really my next question to you is, you've been in it so much longer than I have, but it feels like the critical mass is starting to come. Does it feel that way to you?
Well, you just did with me, Michael, what you did with Kathleen earlier, suggesting I'm much older than you, but that's okay.
No, you're just much more experienced.
Right. That is the point. And you make
I screwed around for a long time before I got serious.
Hey, Kathleen, basically he said, I used to take him to school when he was a little guy. You know, I used But here's the thing, Senator, and you make a good point. First of all, women couldn't vote at one time in America, and we changed that with the 19th Amendment. 18-year-olds could go to war and couldn't vote, and we changed that. Many blacks could not vote because of restrictive laws, and that's why we passed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was passed because people were in the streets, in the suites, and in the courts. And you've got to attack on all fronts. Now, we don't know whether it was in the courts or the suites or the streets that actually got that act through the Congress. But it was all coming together at one time. And as you pointed out right at the outset of this show, the feeling is those same things are happening. The president spoke out in July. Senator Harry Reid, who is the majority leader, co-sponsored the bill. And that's rare among majority leaders. And he spoke out strongly against it before the president. More recently, a couple of days ago, the Attorney General of the United States spoke out in favor. And just before that, in mid-September, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg said it's sad that the people of D.C. are not a state. And so you feel like, and I would stake my 25 years in Congress, I was chief of staff for three different members, you feel like something's about to happen. Something is about to happen. The momentum is growing. Kathleen pointed it out. 2 months ago, you know, it seemed the tunnel's light seemed way off in the distance. But all of a sudden, the light is brightening, and we're getting closer, and we can see the vision of statehood. So I agree with you. Things are happening. We got to keep fighting on all fronts. And this court battle may not be the battle that makes the difference, but it may be the one that nudges the Republicans to do the right thing, to honor the deal that was made in 1801, to have the people treated no different, to have old guys like us, Senator, and veterans who served the country, you know, 200,000 from the District of Columbia, to have folks who wrote the national anthem for the District of Columbia who are now deceased, to have us treated like every other country treats the people who live in their capital cities, no different than anybody else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, Johnny has worked for many people. One of my heroes, Walter Fauntleroy, and he's also he likes to tell people that he was a demolition expert in the Army. He's a veteran, and we thank you for your service, Johnny. But he likes to say he used to build up bridges. Blow up bridges, and now he likes to build them. So
exactly.
We appreciate that.
My job as a combat engineer officer was to build bridges and blow them up. We blew them up so the enemy could not use them. And, you know, back then I preferred to blow the bridges up. I was a young guy, so, you know, that was the excitement. But today we're trying to build bridges. We're trying to build bridges, especially with the Republican Party, and see if they'll do the right thing for us.
Well, that's good. And if they don't, let's sue them and blow them up.
Yep, we'll sue them. We'll blow them up. Hey, you know, I can get that excitement again about blowing them up.
All right. Did you have something you wanted to say before we let the good counselor go, Kathleen?
Yes, I wanted to ask you a question. My question was, this suit is going to go up in front of what court? Is it a
It will be
federal
filed
court
in the U.S. United States District Court for the District of Columbia. Okay. And should we prevail there, or if we don't prevail there, then it would go to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Mm-hmm. Circuit. And if we don't prevail there, then it goes to the United States Supreme Court. I fully expect that we're going to get an ear of interest and understanding from the federal judge who gets this case in U.S. District Court. I've been doing this for 40 years, Kathleen. You know, I sat through those civics classes and those social study classes and those political science classes as a young guy in Indiana. And I went through Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts and Eagle Scouts and all of that. And I bought into this notion that we're all created equal, one person, one vote. And then I came to the District of Columbia, and suddenly, in the shadow of the Washington Monument, I was being treated differently, just by virtue of, as thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands have done over the years, just by virtue of leaving Indiana and coming into Washington, D.C., I became a second-class citizen. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it when I got it. I said, that's not what we were taught. And so this is a 40-year experience that has come to this point. And we sort of chanted the other day that we're tired of the talk. We're not willing to wait. I'm not willing to wait for the restoration of our rights. I think they're obliged to do it since they're breaking their deal. And if they don't do it, they got to bring the CIA and the Pentagon and the National Security Agency back into D.C., and they can't let the FBI leave. I think that'll shake them up a little bit.
Let me just ask you this. This is the same court that has gone against the laws that the D.C. Council passed, like on gun control. Is this the same court that you would be going to?
Yes, it is the same court, except that court has looked at the Second Amendment. And, you know, Kathleen and Senator, as you probably know, I'm sure you know, I was the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of the National Capital Area for 10 years. And people used to ask us, well, if you're fighting for the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, why don't you fight for the right to bear arms in the Second Amendment? And we used to, you know, dance around that. But deep down in our hearts, we knew that if you fight for the Bill of Rights, you got to fight for all 10 amendments. You can't just say we fight for 9, but not the second. And so that court, when the court said gun rights flow out of the Second Amendment and apply to the District of Columbia, we had gun control for 30 years, and we didn't like it. But the fact is that court was right, Kathleen. Yeah. And now what we're doing is reasonably regulating guns. But the Second Amendment does allow for the right to bear arms, but you can reasonably regulate. So you can't. We don't have to do like some states have done and say you can carry guns openly and back to the cowboy days. But right. The Second Amendment does. It's pretty clear in what it provides.
Well, thanks for being with us, Johnny Barnes. We very much appreciate all your hard work. We hope you come back and visit us again. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with Anise Jenkins. Thank you.
Good. John, happy birthday, Kathleen.
We're going to play a song now Paul McCartney, but this goes out to Johnny Barnes, to Senator Tom Carper, Tammy Baldwin, Carl Levin, and John D. Rockefeller of the United States Senate, who are co-sponsors of our bills. Also, Mark Ticano, Janice Hahn, Steve Israel, Stephen Lynch, Alan Lowenthal, Jim McDermott, David Chicheline, Michael Capano, Elijah Cummings, our friend from Maryland, Chris Van Hollen, another Maryland congressman, Al Green, Gregorio Sablin of the Outer Marianas, Matt Cartwright, Daniel Lipinski, Peter Welsh, Mark Pokin, John Sarbanes, the son of the famous Maryland Senator Paul Sarbanes, and also another Dutch Rupersberger, all new co-sponsors of our bill. Thanks. We'll be back in a minute with Anise Jenkins.
This is my right, a right given by God to live a free life, to live in freedom. Talking about freedom. I'm talking about freedom.
Well, thank you, Sir Paul McCartney, for putting it straight for us. Freedom. It's a right given us by God and taken away by Congress. And today we have with us, we're lucky enough to have with us another old friend, Anise Jenkins, who's been the president of Stand Up for Democracy for many years. And, you know, when I first got elected, everybody talked about voting rights except for Anise and a handful of other people. But Anise has always been keeper of the flame. She's always kept the faith. She's never wavered. She's always been a statehood person, and we're very happy to have her here tonight to talk about what's going on with statehood from her end. Hi, Anise, are you with us?
Hi, I'm here. Hi, Senator Brown and Kathleen, how are you all doing?
Hi.
This
good,
is an
good.
Exciting time. It's exciting. It feels like it did when I first got involved in 1997, when people were meeting every day and getting arrested every Thursday, and there were lawsuits. You know, we had the 20 citizens lawsuit with our lawyer was George LaRoche, who has passed since then. We were meeting in the National Council of Negro Women every week in the basement. Dr. Height would come down and greet us. I mean, this is, and I feel like we are getting there. It really feels like people are inspired again. People are determined and committed. And it's just electricity in the air. I just feel it.
Yeah,
well, must say, and excuse me, Senator Brown, I must say that, you know, when you have the president come out and say that it's the right thing to do. If you don't use this moment as a movement to get on board and start, you know, clanging, what do they call it, you know, the cymbals and making a lot of noise, then if you don't get it, it's really the fault of the organizations that the activists are doing it, because this is the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I think also this is the time for you to spread the word outside of D.C. too, because it's amazing how once you get the people in states like Texas and Arizona and Kansas and Georgia hearing about this, they really don't believe. They think you're kind of like, you know, a little cuckoo. Absolutely. How could that be?
Yeah.
That is so true. That's so true. It's we did a survey last summer, and we were on the mall just meeting, a random survey, talking to people, you know, we just made sure they were U.S. citizens if they were included in the survey. But the first reaction to, oh, we don't have a vote, we pointed at the Capitol, because they could see the Capitol right from the mall. And they were like, oh, we don't have a vote there. We live in the nation's capital, but we don't have any voice. And they were shocked. Mm-hmm. They were absolutely shocked. It's like, you're right. They didn't believe it. And then they said, well, that's crazy.
This is democracy. This is supposedly the where democracy is held at its highest is that in the nation's capital, and you know, for the whole free world. And here you guys, you know, you can't vote, you can only vote for a president. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, as a movement, you guys have really got to get everyone, and it is exciting. I mean, when the president says it, you have a hearing on the Senate side. You know, it's very serious. It's a good time to just, you got to, what do they say, that expression, the squeaky wheel, you know, gets greased. You have to make noise and you have to keep at it.
Well, you know, it's funny too, excuse me, Anise, but that you talk about Dr. Height, because I've gotten to do many memorable things as a senator, and I know she was a hero of yours, and she certainly was a hero of mine. I got to meet her a few times in the statehood thing when we went before Congress on the DCVRA, at her memorial service, after the President of the United States gave her eulogy and a bunch of other famous people, I was there at the National Cathedral, and you may have been there too, Anise, and I don't know if you remember, but people started singing This Little Light of Mine. And all I could think while they were singing that is, oh my God, this is really what this woman was, wasn't she? She was a light shiner. And that's what we all need to do. We need to get out there and shine our light. We need.
That's the thing. I mean,
We become one big beacon, and we just can't be ignored anymore.
That's it. I was at the National Book Festival. I don't care where I go. I'm going to talk about statehood. You know, if you have a large group of people, you got to bring it up. John Lewis, you know, the civil rights icon. Had just written a book, and he was at the book festival, and the whole room was full, the ballroom at the Washington Convention Center. And I said, well, how are we going to do this in D.C.? They let people ask questions. I went to the mic, and I asked. I said, how are we going to get statehood in D.C.? And his response was, you people in D.C. are too quiet. That was his response. He said, you're too quiet. Nobody hears you. Nobody hears what you're talking about. Nobody hears anything from you. So that's the key. I really feel it does. It can be arrests. It can be lawsuits. It can be educational pieces going around the country like you've designed, Senator Brown. But we have got to be heard. When people hear our plight, they support us. I mean, the survey we did, it came out immediately. The question was real simple. Do you support Washington, D.C. becoming the 51st state? 73% of the people we asked, random survey, said yes. Why not? What's the problem? Usually the follow-up question from them was, what's the problem? Why won't they do it? But they support us. It's the Congress. It's the politicians who are playing games with us, using us, abusing us, that are keeping this from happening. So we have to find a way to get to them. And the way to get to them is to get to their constituents. So we formed a working relationship with Progressive Democrats of America called PDA. And Stand Up for Democracy is a nonprofit, so basically we're for education. We can't technically go out and do a lot of lobbying, but we've made coalition with Progressive Democrats of America, which is a national organization. We go out and educate, and they go out and lobby on behalf of D.C. statehood. I went to one of the meetings on the Hill about the ERA, and they were presenting extending the ratification of rights for women, which is another thing that people go, what? That didn't happen?
Yeah, we had the lady on our show.
That's right.
We had her on our show, and most people are amazed that the Equal Rights Amendment never passed.
Well, I was shocked because I thought it had for some reason. I remember it being part of my college years, and then I, for some reason, assumed it had gone through.
That's right. That's usually the same reaction we have with statehood. It's like, what? They just can't believe it. It's so many holes in democracy. I mean, this thing is supposed to be a whole cloth, and here it's like moths have attacked it, or it's just not a completed. It's just not complete. It's just not complete yet. So we just have to keep working. But PDA has been going out since June, and they've been doing letter drops, and they've dropped letters in support. They've taken up the cause of D.C. statehood. So they have the capacity to go out on the Hill and ask senators, representatives on the Hill, do you support the D.C. statehood bill?
Well,
do a letter drop to have people around the country. And at the same time that we're up on the Hill presenting our brochures on education about it, they have people out in the district who go into the district the same day and present the letter in the district office.
Well, let me
so this is really what they care about. Yeah.
This is something that I feel kind of very strongly in. Here I'm coming from out, you know, I lived in D.C. for a very long time, went to school, graduated from American University. But one thing in coming back, I think the one place that nobody's hit is the D.C. Council. I mean, I think they're talking now. You know, Vincent Gray, the mayor, spoke in front of the hearing, and, you know, Phil Mendelson was there. But I'm going to say this from somebody who's looked on the outside, not been inside this movement for very long, is that I think that you need more support. You need the D.C. Council to also be saying we need statehood. Although I think it's like anything in a political environment, the sense of maybe losing some power because you're going to have two senators and a rep is something maybe that they're not embracing. And the way that they could start to embrace this effort is by funding maybe your organization, because I'm sure you're not for profit and you have, you know, a hard time raising money amongst all the things that are needed in the community, and, you know, that they should fund, in a sense, our senators to be able to do their job and go out there and lobby Congress, because as Mr. Barnes said before, you need to do this on many, many sides. You can't just take one angle at it. You've got to do it from the front, the back, the side, the top, the down, to really get pressure on these people to move.
Well, and, you know, one thing is that there has been a little bit of funding, and we're getting a little bit of funding, and Anise gets a little bit of funding.
Excuse me, but how much does Puerto Rico spend?
Well, no, that's the whole point, $20 million. And the point is that now the funding really has to come, because now's the time. And given dribs and drabs, and we've had to, I know that Anise's funding and some other people's funding has had to been wrestled away from, you know, we've really had to fight for the little bit of money, and now they really need to stand up, I think, and start making a genuine effort and not giving nickels and dimes to this. They wouldn't give nickels and dimes to education or any other priority in the District of Columbia, and this needs to be a priority.
When has the D.C. Council gone to the Hill and lobbied for statehood?
It doesn't happen. They speak about it, and we do have some support for funding the delegation. We actually have six people that are in support of it, but they don't as a rule go up there. It's people like Anise that go up there and fight constantly for it. So what do you think about that, Anise?
I know
how you feel.
It's insane. You expect, this is a huge fight. This is not a little skirmish. I mean, this is a struggle. This is a civil rights struggle. If you read about the civil rights struggle, one of the main duties of Dr. King, Dr. James Forman, who I work with, he headed SNCC, and I worked with him just before his death. He was on automatic. Dr. Forman was still trying to raise money for D.C. statehood. Dr. King traveled the country raising money. Money is the lifeblood of a movement. I mean, you've got to care, you've got to have passion, but you also have to have money. It's ridiculous to say that the statehood delegation is supposed to lobby Congress on nothing. I mean, you need money. You got to live. You got to eat. You have to have materials. You have to have employees, a staff. It's insane. It's just stupid.
Yeah, it is. And, it's almost funny when you think about it. I mean, ironic when you think about it, because I ran a business for 25 years, and I just think of somebody coming to me and saying, look, this is going to be your job, Michael. You're going to have to change the way America's been for 210 years. How are you going to do that? And me saying, well, let's get a couple of volunteers working on that. You know,
right.
You're right. It's just crazy. It's insane. Why would you do that? You'd say, yeah, we need to put together a program. We need to put some PR. You were there in Charlotte. Both of you were there in Charlotte when we put up those billboards. And it took every penny we had, and you know, but it got the press cycle, it got the people talking, it changed the fight down there. A lot of people went down there with the whole budget autonomy thing, as their primary goal, and it changed it to statehood. But unfortunately, when the convention was over, that particular effort was over too, because we didn't have any money to follow up on it. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Kathleen. We need to put some money in this. And so, what are next steps for you, Anise, for your organization?
Well, now this is kind of local. Well, this is local, but it kind of follows up on what Kathleen was talking about. On Thursday, October 2nd, we are having a candidates forum focused on D.C. statehood, and we've been doing this every election cycle. This time, we're going to the candidates who will be invited, and we always invite all candidates who are certified by the Board of Elections and Ethics. So if they're on the ballot, no matter what party, they're invited to participate in the debate.
Well, that's great, because this affects all of us. And again, you bring this up. Kathleen sent her son out for a visit. He's my godson. And I brought him, I don't know if you remember this, but I brought him to last year, the last time you had a candidates forum. It must have been for the primary.
Right.
I brought him.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he found it fascinating. So.
Get a chance to say, you're being recorded. You get a chance to say, well, didn't you say that you supported this during the debate? And you have them on record. And right now it's popular, I think, to say you're for statehood. I don't think there's a politician in D.C. who's going to really say they're against it. Maybe one or two.
Maybe
but we really have to. We have to do follow-up. You're for it. What are you going to do about it? What have you done? What are your plans? How do you want to vote to fund the statehood delegation? I mean, we're really specific in our questions.
Yeah.
So that's really what's coming up for us. Then we're going to be participating in the Howard University Homecoming Parade, which is really important. The Homecoming Parade attracts people from all over the country, all over the world. Howard University students represent places from globally, So we're going to have our statehood banner. I hope you'll be with us, Senator Brown.
Yeah,
we'll be passing out literature on the campus and just reaching out.
I've done it before.
Just
it's a long walk for an old man, but it's always been a nice day. And, one thing you have to say about Howard University, we have so many universities in the city, so many great universities, but Howard has always stood up behind us from as long as I can remember. I've been to many forums there and teach-ins and other things, the students are more engaged than the average student in Washington. So it's always nice to participate with them because they really get it.
It's a civil rights struggle, as I said, and I think at this time every member of the Congressional Black Caucus has become a co-sponsor of the statehood bill.
That's great. As far
as I know there is one senator. I don't know if he's still in office. He may not be. He's very conservative. But as far as I know, all of the House members of the Congressional Black Caucus are on board with the statehood bill.
Yeah, I know.
Because
it would be the Hispanic caucus, strangely enough,
endorsed the DNC meeting, the last DNC meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So the Democratic Hispanic Caucus actually endorsed the statehood bill. So
that's good.
Yeah, it was great. We went. Somebody brought up one of our DNC members here in Washington brought up a resolution before the Hispanic Caucus, and they passed it. So,
and
that's the thing. I think that the more this gets out there, which is another reason we need the money, and we also need people to be active, is the more this gets out here, the more people will get behind it because, you know, it's the principle that our country was founded on. So we find very few people. Johnny mentioned that I travel around a lot through the country talking about this, and I hardly ever run into anybody who says, yeah, you shouldn't have the same rights that every other American citizen has. So this is, I feel, an injustice that cannot stand on its own 2 feet, and if we can just get it out there enough, the message out there enough, I'm sure we'll get support.
Well, you know, Senator Brown, when the first grant, I guess you would call it, was issued, it was $1 million under former Mayor Anthony Williams. Now, it wasn't for statehood, though. That was the problem. It was for voting rights. And it actually was $1 million, and it was designated for one organization. And I'm not going to name that organization.
Okay.
But since then, unfortunately now, on one hand, it's really good because it's on a bid process now instead of being designated for one organization, but it's no longer as much. It's going down to, I think it's about 200,000, and it's up for bid. So it's really been reduced, and I really don't understand it. And that's something we need to challenge when we speak before the council at the next budget hearing. We need
that's
to find out why
true.
That money. Yeah. Yeah,
and,
we really
and that
do.
Organization that you won't mention is still the organization that gets the lion's share of it. And so we need to change that, too. Well, we're out of time here, but we want to thank you, Anise, for coming on, as always.
Well, thank you. Senator Brown, I want to compliment you particularly on your testimony before the Senate. You have worked so hard, and you've been so committed. I just really have to thank you for being in office, and I will always support you, always.
Well, thank you, Anise. I really appreciate that.
You've been extraordinary.
I feel the same way about you. Very committed. And so I'm going to let Kathleen, are you still awake, Kathleen, at your age?
Hey, I'm 56. I'm 56.
At your age,
I'm 46. I'm
46,
sorry, I'm 46.
Yeah. Well, the first thing
she's
you know
a baby.
Is remember. Yeah, baby.
Baby.
All right, thank you, Anise. And sign off,
thank
Kathleen,
you.
And we'll be back next week.
Gracias a todos mis amigos que están allí en Arizona and in Sonora. Mucho gusto. Gracias por todo.
Ditto. Thank you, America. We'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.